Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
All right, welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 455. Show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Carrie Holzman, the YouTuber extraordinaire and Newegger. How you doing, Carrie?
I'm good, Jeff. Hey, thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
It has been a while, and I've actually missed our conversations that usually go on for hours at a time into the wee too. Hours of the morning.
In fact, I'm going to apologize ahead of time that there's going to be some coughing during this interview because I'm just getting over the tail end of the flu. I've had a bad week with fighting a fever, so I didn't get any work done.
Ooh.
And, you know, sometimes it's what it takes to actually have me relax is I have to visit death's door. Yeah, you know, I think that work can wait, you know, and I'll stay in bed. But I've got some cough medicine. Hopefully it'll help. My voice is mostly back. And, you know, I've been driving to Los Angeles for a couple of days a month to film for Newegg TV. And one of the things that keeps me company, as you're well aware, is the Podnuts Daily Show. the Podnuts Daily Show. And I'll often be waiting till I get a cell phone signal. So, you know, I'm in the desert. I'll be listening to one of your interviews and I'm just loving it. You know, I'm digging on it and like, oh, I gotta call and make a comment about this and leave a voicemail. And that's, you know, how I try and stay in touch anyway. Because I know if I don't do it right in that moment, it won't get done.
There's a lot of truth to that. No, I definitely appreciate it because, I love the feedback, especially in the form of a voicemail that we can actually play on the show and people get entertained and educated by it all at the same time.
I love the interviews you're doing. I've told you this before. Nothing's changed. I still enjoy, you know, listening to hear other techs that are both just starting out or have been in business for a while, listening to their tales of from the trenches. Those are my favorite stories. You had a gentleman on during my last trip, I was listening, who was talking about, you know, living out in the sticks and having somebody basically stalk him and had to get a restraining order and all this other stuff. And just nodding my head going, I've been there. I had one of those. And something that I know Mike and I haven't discussed on the Tech Show. That's how long it's been since we only did three Tech Vet shows in all of 2015.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we're going to try and make more time for that. You know, we enjoy doing it. We enjoy each other's company. It's just, everybody gets so busy but all I have to do is sit down and listen to these shows. And I think, wow, this is such great content. I sure would love to join in on that. And so I'm glad you're able to find some time for me so we can get caught up. And, you know, one of the things that's been on my mind with Windows 10 lately is the all the marketing that's happening in Windows 10, both from the standpoint of Windows 7 and 8 users that are getting this annoying pop-up that continues to ceaselessly, relentlessly bombard them with a request to upgrade to Windows 10. The latest tactic Microsoft is using has a pop-up window that says, I'll do it now or I'll download it, install it later. There is no, I don't want it. You have to just find that red X and close it. But if you're not a techie person, it's not obvious. So like, how do you get rid of this thing? And even then, it only temporarily dismisses it while it comes back. And for the people who upgrade it to Windows 10, now their computer's a great big billboard. And that it has me so offended. I don't even know where to begin. My understanding is now when you sign out of Windows 10 and you're back to the login screen, advertisements start appearing on your login screen. So here's your computer with your resources, your screen, your memory, your RAM, your internet. It's all paid for by you. And now Microsoft is leeching that off of you for their own advertising purposes to sell. Hey, it's Windows 10 was free, right? Well, now you got advertising on your login screen, which if you're in a professional environment, I don't think that's very professional. to say your real estate office, and a couple of workstations are free. The employees have stepped away from them. They're on their login screen, and now there's an advertisement for some product that has nothing to do with real estate. It seems really inappropriate to me. You've mentioned in the past a free program called GWX Control Panel.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So GWX is the name of the program, GWX.exe, which stands for Get Windows 10 GWX. And that's the little annoying program that pops up. And I have removed spyware, and I have removed adware, and I've removed viruses, but I've never, ever had to remove anything as difficult to get off as that.
that's
so
true.
The GWX Control Panel has gotten more powerful as, you know, you think you get rid of the thing, and then all of a sudden you go to Windows Update, and boom, there it is as a priority update. Like, no, this isn't a priority. What are you doing? I don't want this in my update. So they come out with an update to GWX Control Panel to shut off the updates in Windows, the GWX update in Windows Update, then to get rid of the icon down in the system tray. And it's not doing anything harmful to the system, so that if you want to bring it back, you can easily undo it with GWX Control Panel. And they have an installer version and a portable version. I always use the portable version. And on every Windows 7 and 8 computer, I ask the clients, I go, does this little flag down here, does this bother you? And about 8 out of 10 people say it does. I go, well, let's download this. Let's take care of that. It'll be done. And for those who upgraded to Windows 10, let me get back to my rant on that. So if you want, for a lot of people, they like Solitaire. So to get Solitaire on Windows 10, you have to go to Microsoft Store. For Microsoft Store, you have to basically give up a lot of personal information. And that's to create the account. Pee Wee Herman used to do stand-up, and he used to do this routine where he said, I'll trade you a Tootsie Roll for your wallet. Anybody want to trade me their wallet for a Tootsie Roll? Gotcha. And people would do it. And this is what it feels like to me. It's like, let's take my account. I've got, if we use Facebook for an example, Microsoft's basically using the Facebook business model. On my Facebook page, I've got over 4,000 friends.
Okay.
Now, out of courtesy of those quote-unquote friends, I don't go and play games online with Facebook. Because if I did, my agreement to play the game for free is that I'm giving them all of the contact information of everybody that's connected to me.
Right, right.
So that to me is a huge disrespectful thing to do to anybody who's friended me, to turn around and hand over their information because I want to play some game. Or you want to take which Happy Days character are you? You know, take this Facebook quiz and find out which Star Wars character are you? And then if you read what it says when you click the accept button, is that you're giving them all of that information. So we'll go back to Windows 10. Now with Solitaire, you've got to sign up for the Microsoft account. So you got to give up, you know, what's your birth date, da-da-da-da. You give them this information, create your free Microsoft account. And now you've basically traded all this personal identifiable information about you so that you can play Solitaire. But it's not the same Solitaire that was on Windows 7 and before. This Solitaire has advertising around it. And if you don't want the advertising, you pay $1.99. That'll get rid of that advertising. But then when you sign out of your Windows 10 and you go back to your login screen, there's going to be advertising there. So I'm so offended by this, that Microsoft would so brazenly utilize my resources for their profits. It has me deeply offended, and it feels very pathetic on behalf of Microsoft, almost like it's desperate, like, oh my God, we're going broke. We have to find a way to make money on top of the money that we're making on top of that money. So, I mean, there's a level of greed here that in all of my wildest dreams of how to make money, never once have I thought that I could make money by including advertising into something I've already sold. And
I was going to say, now, let me ask you a question, because I'm running 5 Windows 10 machines right in front of me right now. Mm-hmm. And there's no advertising on my login screen.
It's supposed to start.
Oh, okay. So it hasn't started yet.
I don't know if it started yet or not, but it's supposed to start.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, that would be very interesting to.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
That. Right.
It makes sense. Like we have a Kindle, and Amazon sells 2 versions of the Kindle, an advertising supported Kindle and a non-advertising supported Kindle. And when my wife sets her Kindle down, it goes back to a default login screen with an advertisement on it.
Okay.
But we paid $20 less for that Kindle.
Sure.
That's a fair trade. No problem. Microsoft saying, okay, we're going to give you Windows 10. If in fact they continue to give it out for free, I don't really have an issue with this, but I do have an issue with the level of desperation of trying to get people on 7 and 8 to switch over. Furthermore, Microsoft has announced that Windows 7 in 18 months' time will no longer support Skylake processors or anything newer.
Right, I'd heard that, yeah.
So what does that mean for anybody who bought a machine with a Skylake processor that came with Windows 10, fully supported by Microsoft when they bought it, but then a couple months later, Microsoft says, we don't support that anymore? And what does that even mean? What part of a processor is not supported? I don't understand this at all, because it's not like the CPU has any specific driver that I'm aware of.
No, but I think it comes back to, if you think about computer parts in themselves and you think about motherboards work with certain types of RAM better than others. And it kind of comes to the same type of thing where I don't know why they said it, to be honest with you. It doesn't make any sense to me, because the chances are you're going to have a Skylake processor and it will work just fine. But they're just giving you the legalese to say it's not recommended to work with this processor, or we're not supporting it. You know,
but in the meantime, if you have the server version of Windows, it does support Skylake.
Right. Yeah, it makes no sense.
So it's not like they're writing two different versions of the operating system.
Nope. It's all one, even down to the phone level.
And now you see it with power supplies. You'll see there's 80 plus bronze, 80 plus gold, 80 plus titanium. Back just a few years ago, there was none of this existed. It was hard to tell a good power supply from a bad one. Just you did it through experience or word of mouth. But it cracks me up, because I'll make these videos and people go, I can't believe you're using a cheap CX power supply from Corsair. That cheap CX power supply is 80 plus bronze. That's so much better than the Deer brand power supplies, whatever the heck those things were called that we were using, that, you know, that featherweight things that they weighed like 4 ounces, the whole power supply.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And now the marketing company has to find a way to justify, okay, so for us to get to this level of efficiency, we need to put in larger capacitors that cost us more money. We need to charge more money for that. How do we charge more money for this? We tell people it's better. And people are so, this is the thing that really, and I should know better by now, but people continue to amaze me with how they just follow along with it and they don't question anything. Oh yeah, you got to have the titanium power supply. Oh yeah, you got to have the RM series. Don't even look at the CX or the CS series from Corsair. You got to look at the RM. No, you don't. Oh yeah, you can get coil whine. Really? Coil whine. Okay.
That little hot glue will fix that right up.
I just, you know, it's such a different school of thought. And it's, you realize so much of this is being manipulated by the marketing companies to create a need and a desire and a justification to spend more money for something you absolutely, in most cases, don't need. Liquid cooling. These videos drive me nuts. People sitting there saying, well, how come you didn't use a liquid cooler? Or how come you just use the OEM fan? What's wrong with the OEM fan? Oh, the CPU will overheat. No, it won't. Yes, it will. No, it won't.
Right.
Yes, it will. Okay, well, that's where this conversation is going. So Intel makes a CPU fan that doesn't cool its own processor. So now I have to make a video where I go, hey guys, look, here's a brand new Intel CPU, brand new motherboard, OEM fan. This is Prime 95. We're going to just work the heck out of that CPU.
Right.
We're going to watch our temps. Is the CPU overheating? No. All right, now watch this. We're going to take the CPU fan off. And just to confuse the system, we're going to leave it plugged in. What do you think it's going to do? You think it's going to catch fire? You think it's going to start smoking? It'll start to throttle down until it eventually shuts off to protect itself. Okay. This is the big crisis you're trying to avoid?
Right. Exactly.
And it may be, there may be situations where if I just, for the sake of argument, say, let's just pretend that the CPU does overheat with the stock cooler. I've not experienced it. But we'll just, for the sake of argument, because I'm so tired of it, of this conversation. How would you know? How do you know your CPU is throttling down? you have to be running some kind of monitoring software to watch that.
Right. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So you're basically looking for a problem. Why? So I've got all these, I'm going to just call them normal people who own computers. And they use their computers for some pretty complicated tasks. Some of these folks do. And their CPUs might be throttling. It's absolutely possible. But they don't know it. And their computers, as far as they're concerned, they're the fastest computers they've ever owned. So what are we fixing? So there's this whole marketing company convincing people you need a liquid cooler. The aftermarket cooler, the OEM coolers are junk. There's so many people listening to this right now that are nodding their head going, Kerry doesn't know what he's talking about. Those OEM coolers are junk. And yet for 25 years, Jeff, I've been building systems and I've been using those OEM coolers. And the one consistent thing over all 25 years is that the OEM coolers very rarely ever have to be replaced.
Right.
But I can't count the number of thermal take fans that have gone bad or mounting mechanisms that have broken or bent CPUs. That's going on right now at the Skylakes. You know when your Skylake processor won't bend? When you're using the OEM fan that comes with it. Now, you know there's some jackwagon out there going, well, some Skylake processors don't come with OEM fans. And that's where you deal with the people who just want to argue. So this is my challenge, is I'm trying to, and I knew this was going to happen. I knew that as I wanted to teach the novices, that the self-proclaimed experts would come out of the woodwork and tell me that I was doing it wrong. And they'd want me to cover more detail and more specific information, which then takes away the gentle approach to the introduction of the technology, because it doesn't fit with their, well, you didn't technically accurately explain this to a level of, say, look, I'm not trying to turn anybody into a tech. We're just trying to show them how to build a computer here.
Right.
So we end up making videos that now I have to cover all this other information. And I go back and I look back at the videos and I'm in editing. And there I am for a half an hour talking about OEM fans versus, and I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? This isn't for anybody who knows the difference. This is for people who've never done it before.
Right.
And this happened to me when I wrote my book too. Copy editor says, you only used a paragraph to explain Java. It doesn't explain Java. So I start to elaborate on what Java is. And by I get to about page 4, I go, what am I doing? People. People who want to know what Java is, beyond my simple explanation, can go get a book 4 inches thick just on Java.
Right.
For the rest of us, they just are curious, what is it in general? What's the gist of it? And let's move on. And if I had followed the advice of this technical editor, I would have ended up with a book 4 inches thick. And when you're trying to sell a book that says, look, the easy manual, the easiest book there is to follow for computer maintenance, but it's 4 inches thick. It's kind of like the title says one thing and reality says another.
Right.
There's no easy book that's 4 inches thick.
That's a textbook. Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's the delicate balance that I have. And what I don't understand is, in my world, looking at the world through my eyes, all this energy that people spend about the importance of their 80 plus gold power supply or their aftermarket cooler, and not a word about Microsoft's desperate attempts at convincing people to put Windows 10 on their systems and for trading their identities for a free game. Not a peep, nothing to say about that.
Well, you know, what's funny, because going back to some of those things, like when I look at a power supply, I'll look at a power supply and I basically look at the warranty. I don't care whether it's an 80 plus gold, titanium, whatever. My power supply right now is an EVGA and it's got a 10-year warranty on it. That's all I care about. It's going to last me 10 years. And if it doesn't, they're going to replace it. No questions asked. So as long as they don't go out of business. And so I look at that way.
This cracks me up, because you change your hard drive every year.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you'll have a power supply for 10.
Yeah. As long as it's, because my power supplies, usually I don't buy the most expensive. I buy still best bang for the buck, middle of the road, and they just last me forever.
Well,
I generally don't have a problem.
you know what the warranty is on your Samsung hard drive?
Oh, I think 3 years.
Yeah, and if you get the Pro, it's 5.
Yeah, I've got the Pro. So yeah, you're right.
I mean, 5. you can build. Think about this. I was thinking about doing a build video on this. You could build, in theory, a 10-year warranty computer or something darn close. At least a 5-year warranty computer. With EVGA's got great warranties on their video cards, power supplies,
right?
And then you've got 3 and 5 year on many motherboard manufacturers,
right? Yep.
The 5-year SSD warranty on the Samsung. I think it's 5, it could be 10.
I can't
have to look it up.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly. I think it might be a little bit longer than 5 now that I think about it. On the Pros. I think the Pros are actually 10.
Can you imagine? Well, a 10-year warranty computer, just every component in it.
That'd be awesome. Part of the reason, so when I say I replace my hard drive, what ends up happening is that's just on my production machine. That hard drive goes to good use. It goes into another machine. So it's not like I stop using that hard drive. It's just...
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure it doesn't just get chucked in the trash. Right.
I refresh it, not always at once a year, but at least once every couple of years. And maybe I'll get something that's a little bit bigger, or it's not a huge change, but just enough to maybe redo my system or something like that. So, as far as Windows 10, to be honest with you, I love Windows 10. I love it on all my machines. It does everything that I need it to do. It actually runs better on older laptops that I have. It runs smoother than Windows 7 ever did on some of the old Gateway laptops and things I had that are like 7 years old. And as far as that goes, that amazes me. I've always had a Microsoft account, so they've had my information for probably the last 15 years. So to me, I just log in with my Microsoft account. Plus, if you have an Xbox, you're going to have an account. You already got a Microsoft account anyway. So a lot of people already have these things. So I don't know that it's for the mainstream people. I don't know that it's that big a deal. I think part of the problem is, though, I have been encouraging people to actually make a Microsoft account versus a local account on Windows 10. Now, Windows 8 was a little different. I was kind of torn between doing one way and one the other way. I wasn't sure if there was any benefits to having an actual Microsoft login.
Well, wasn't it you that said that? Maybe it wasn't you. Somebody said that their daughter had a laptop at school or something, and laptop crashed. You said, "Well, I don't know. In the meantime, here you can use my laptop." And as soon as she signed in with her Microsoft account, all of her data was there.
Right, right. That was
the benefit of it.
Yeah, but I've had customers that have actually used OneDrive as their storage system instead of putting things instead of being just in my documents, it'll be in her documents. It'll be on the OneDrive documents, and they save all their file systems there, or all their documents and pictures and stuff there, so that whenever they log into another system, it doesn't really matter what happens to their data. It's right there for them. So some people have used that. Now, not everybody, and again, it's not something I necessarily teach my customers. It would probably be a good idea, but a lot of Microsoft stuff tends to be somewhat complicated. It's not as simple as everybody thinks. So,
so that's not the reason you're all gung ho on it.
No, I as far as how it works, I like how it works. But then again, I liked how Windows 8 worked too, and Windows 7. And
well, I didn't care for Windows 8. I don't mind Windows 10. I've got it on my laptop, and I take it back. I got it on my video editing machine.
Mm.
My laptop's still running Windows 8, and I struggle with it. But my issue with 10 is the unwanted get Windows 10 software.
Right. Yeah.
That installs without user consent on 7 and 8. The relentless advertising once you do get Windows 10 that Microsoft now wants to nickel and dime you on everything.
Yeah, if it goes that way, that's going to be
interesting. That's where it's going. Okay. That's where it's already going that way. So I can't.
again, it's one of those things where when I see it, it's going to be, yeah, a very much an irritant. But right now, as far as how it's working, I don't have an issue with it. As far as getting online, I mean, every time I get online with Google, I use my Google browser for pretty much everything. And they have all my information and they're advertising to me every time I do a search. That's the stuff that's coming up, is the stuff I've searched for. So
if I'm doing something that the results of my actions result in advertisement, in exchange for this search, I'm going to see an ad. In exchange for watching this video on YouTube, there's going to be a commercial. I'm okay with that. Action, reaction. What I'm not okay with is my system idling. At least I think it's idling, but it's not idling.
Right.
What's happening is data is being transmitted to Microsoft with an account of log history of whatever my computer's been doing or any error logs.
Right.
An advertisement may then be sent to my computer based on my activities that they think it's not just a generic advertisement. It's an advertisement based on the information that's been reported from the computer that they think is going to be of interest to the person that runs that computer.
But like,
it's you're not doing anything to cause that,
right,
other than just having the system on.
Yeah. See, on the login screen, that's not going to be kosher, I don't think.
There'll be programs that'll turn this off, I'm sure. But
sure. But you shouldn't have to do that. You should be able to, if I'm using a browser, like you said, that's one thing. I'm using a browser for a specific purpose and it's trading information back and forth. I'm choosing to have information go in and out. But when your computer's sitting there idle, no, absolutely not. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
And I ran it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that, do you think that the GWX is going to go away when they're no longer offering Windows 10 for free in July? Or what's your thoughts on that?
I think Microsoft's going to continue to give it away for free. I have nothing to base this on.
Okay.
I just think that's what they're going to do. I think July 29 is going to come and go. And they're going to say, out of the kindness of our hearts, we're going to extend this another 6 months or whatever it'll be.
Interesting. Okay.
How can they sell it? How can you sell me an operating system that's going to turn around and exploit me for profit? Exploit my use of your operating system for profit.
True, except I thought about buying a license key the other day because I wasn't sure. I just built a new system. And when I built the new system, I said, all right, let me use a legitimate Windows 7 key to do a fresh install.
Right.
And to my surprise, it actually worked. Yeah. Flawlessly. So I was like,
since November, it works since November.
Correct. Yes. Before then I was having, you would basically have to do the upgrade and do the upgrade path, let it verify, go back in, take the software and reinstall it. And you could get a clean install. To be honest,
you know what else you can do?
What's that?
You can go to Amazon or wherever you want to buy a legitimate refurbished license for Windows 7, 32-bit. And use that license code. You don't even have to install the product. When you get the DVD in the mail, you'll have the license code. Use that license code on Windows 10 64-bit.
Interesting.
No problem. Okay. So now you get a Windows 10 Pro. So let's say, like on Amazon, I think you can get a 32-bit Windows 7 Pro refurbished. So it's intended to go on refurbished computers for around $40, maybe $50. Windows 7 Pro is $139.99.
Okay.
Now, customer of mine built a system with 32 gigs of RAM. On Windows 7 Home, 64-bit edition, you can only see 16 gigs of RAM. Did you know that?
Not on my system, but okay.
On every system ever. Windows 7 Home, 64-bit.
No, because I had 32 gigs. Yep.
On Windows 7 Home.
Yep.
If you go to your system properties.
No, you know what? I take that back. No, let me take that back. It was Windows 7 Ultimate.
Yeah.
So just difference. on the home premium you're talking about.
Home premium.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
It's the only OS in the entire series that does this.
Okay.
So you got 32 gigs of RAM. You go to your system properties, it'll say RAM, 32 gigs. Parenthesis 16 gigabyte usable.
Wow.
Yeah. So users are using computers with 32 gigs of RAM, completely not using 32 gigs of RAM, and they're completely unaware of it until you point it out to them. So the reason I bring this up is this customer of mine had Windows 7 Home 64-bit. And I said, we were talking about building a system, and I mentioned this 16 gig limitation. Let's get the refurbished version of Windows 7 Pro 64-bit for $50, which is half the price of the OEM version of Windows 7 Home Premium 64-bit.
Right. Okay.
That removes the memory limitation.
Interesting.
And then if you want to upgrade it to Windows 10, you don't even have to install that disk. You can just use the product key, download the Media Maker stuff from Microsoft to make a bootable DVD or USB flash drive. By the way, you ever used a program called Rufus?
Yes. I use it all the time.
Yep. Yeah, I love that program.
Yeah, great program.
So Rufus, if you have an ISO image of anything, I don't care what it is, Acronis, Linux, Windows, it'll make that into a bootable flash drive. Remember how hard it used to be to make bootable? Make flash drives bootable.
Exactly. Oh, it's so, yeah, these programs nowadays, man, you kids.
Yeah, I wish I'd have had that years ago. I know, it's great. We used to have this HP utility that did it. Good, it kind of did, kind of didn't. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. It's really confusing. And now Rufus is so easy. It's like, where's this been?
Right.
Oh. But yeah, so you can save some money now. People are going to say, well, that's not really kosher. Look, my job is not to enforce Microsoft's internal policies. And people sometimes confuse Microsoft's internal policies with what is legal in the United States of America or in other places of the world. Most of these terms and conditions set forth by these corporations in this country remain unchallenged in a court of law. So the legality is up in the air until challenged. So the onus doesn't fall on the buyer. The onus is on the seller to verify that if you bought the Home and Student Edition of Microsoft Office, how do they really know you qualify as a home or student use?
Right.
So that's up to the seller. So if you buy it and the seller sells it to you, then you own it legally as far as the law is concerned.
Right.
Now, Microsoft may not like that, but Microsoft needs to take that up with their sellers. No differently than if you buy a refurbished license and you're putting it on a brand new machine that's not refurbished. Someone might say, well, that's not what that license was intended for. That's right. Do you think the FBI is going to come barreling down your door because you wanted to save $50 on your operating system? I think it's a lot better than pirating it. I think it's a lot better than, you know, using BitTorrent and God knows what you're going to get.
Exactly.
So here you're getting a legitimate copy of Windows. It's going to activate and it's going to use no different to an end user than the OEM from OEM to refurbishers. No difference.
Right. No, the bits of, through all of them, the bits are identically the same.
There's just the pre-qualifier, which again is up to the seller. So if the seller sells it to you and you didn't qualify for it, seller's bad. You're okay legally.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like what you said, it's an end user license agreement. It's not a legal law. It's the license agreement between you and said company. And the interpretation can be slightly different from person to person.
Well, and Microsoft is trying to move that to more of a rental situation.
Sure, sure.
And that's where this whole Windows 10 thing is going. It's all going to using it for a period of time, which ultimately is all we do anyway, right? I mean, there's only so many years you could use Windows XP.
Exactly.
But well, this whole premature cutting off the legs of Skylake processors on Windows 7 and even Windows 8 supporting 8.1, not supporting Skylake processors. After the sale, they make this comment to you after you've already made the purchase.
Right, right.
That should be illegal.
Yeah.
So too many people focus, in my opinion, on what the end users are doing legally or not legally, instead of focusing on what these corporations are doing, whether or not that should be legal or not.
Right.
And so I'd like to see a lot more. Here's what I'd like. In Carrie's perfect world, so I'd like to see people question authority more.
Well,
stop obeying and start questioning more. It should make sense. Everything should follow a flow and a logic that, just like the computer, makes perfect sense. Companies in business to make a profit, you know, yada, yada, yada. There should be acceptable limits to how far these companies can go, where the end users don't have a choice but to go along for the ride or be left behind, because that's basically the situation Microsoft's got us in.
Yeah. It is interesting, because I've gone back and forth where I've looked at, when you think about monopolies, and I go back to this old story of mine where my phone line got cut. This is back when we actually had regular copper lines come in the house for a phone that hung on your wall. Yes, people. It's
you, old man.
Yes, exactly. It's my birthday today, so I just turned 46.
Wow. Okay. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'll send you a Snapchat message if you knew how to use it.
Yeah, I don't.
Or as you call it, chatter snap.
It's just wrong. So anyways, I had copper wire coming to my house. It got cut. And this was back when I remember back in the day when Ma Bell was this big, huge conglomerate company.
Oh, sure.
And
you used to rent your phone.
Yeah. Well, the government came in and they said, we're going to take out all these monopolies and we're going to cut everything down to size. And here's a problem I have with that is Ma Bell back in the day would actually, if my phone line broke, they'd be out that day. They could fix it. Boom, 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 boom. Done. My phone is up and running. As soon as they cut out all Ma Bell and the monopolies and it went down to these smaller companies, I remember having this phone line in my backyard, called the phone company. Said, hey, I need this phone line fixed. And they gave me an appointment that was 2 weeks out. Now, mind you, this is back before cell phones were actually economical. So I'm sitting here going, okay, I'm going to be without a phone for 2 weeks. So there are some things that I actually appreciate out of some of the larger companies, the things that they do. But I think a lot of times, there are things where they're overreaching and they are a little misguided for what normal people want.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Nostalgic for the
phone company.
We've been on the phone, virtual phone, for an hour.
Yeah.
Do you know how much this would have cost from Detroit to Phoenix for an hour in 1978?
Yeah. Horrible. Horrible. You don't actually have the number, do you?
No, but it was a lot of money.
It would have been, yes.
And minimum wage. When I got my first job at Jack in the Box in 1984, was $3.35 an hour.
Remember those days.
So not only was it a lot of money, but you didn't make as much money as you make today.
Right.
So that makes it seem even more extraordinary. In Arizona, we used to have Michigan used to be 313. That was pretty much it. I think the UP had a different area code, right. But the glove, the mitten, was 313.
Yep.
Not anymore.
Nope.
And in Arizona, Phoenix used to be 602, and they split it into three. So it's 623, 602, and 480. And it used to be a local long distance. And you got to love the phone company. It was a local long distance call, which was charged at a lower rate, but it wasn't free. So for me to call from Glendale to Mesa, it's about a 30-mile distance. I was charged by the minute for that phone call.
Oh,
that rounded is, up.
Yeah.
Then now, since the baby bells, I can call all of the Phoenix metropolitan area.
Right.
In fact, I can call the Detroit metropolitan area. I can call anywhere in the United States on my cell phone. It's a free local call, basically.
Right.
I mean, does anybody even know what long distance is anymore? Unless they have relatives out of the country.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only time you actually get charged, and that goes right on your cell bill. So,
and again, if we're using Skype, and while I'm talking to you on Skype, I'm seeing an advertisement now. Microsoft wanted to improve my Skype experience before we connected, and now I'm getting advertisements I never got before. This is organic protein, plant-based vegan, $5 off coupon. Offer ends on or before February 29th. Today is February 28th, and there's about 4 hours left of February 28th on the Arizona time zone. So we talk about marketing. We're talking about expiration dates. What are the expiration dates for? They're to give you a reason to motivate you to use that coupon before it expires. It's silliness. going off track on my line of reasoning here. I get so worked up on it because as a technician, one of the major things that's important to me to pursue is just being a consumer advocate, just to make people aware. And it used to be enough to just make people aware of drive-by downloads or be cautious of that free software on the internet. But now when Microsoft is pulling these stunts,
right,
and it's become this kind of accepted use standard in cell phone industry with smartphones and smartphone apps, you know, how many flashlight apps basically took people's information?
Oh, yeah.
And all it was a stupid flashlight. All it did turn the light on your phone. And then people were shocked when they found out that this thing harvested their contacts in exchange for that free flashlight app.
And what a lot of people didn't understand is that the companies that made these agreements to, if you needed one thing, one sort of, what are they called? If you just needed one thing for that particular app to run on the phone. The problem is, and Google did this back in the day, and I think they've gotten a little bit better, but not much. Everything's in groups. So it's like, I need this one thing, but you have to have this whole group in order to actually be able to put this app out. It's like,
oh, right.
Why wouldn't you just have separate things for whatever is actually needed? Well, they bundle everything together. And again, you can be it could be because of manpower. It could be whatever. Who knows? Ease of use. I don't know exactly why they do it. I just think there's a lot of smart engineers that sit there and go, yeah, it really doesn't matter. But to us, the end consumer, we're looking at it and we go, well, that's kind of irritating. Why are you doing that? And I also wonder that we're talking about computers and licenses and all that kind of stuff. I still think the majority of people still buy their machines with whatever operating system it has on there.
Of course.
So I don't recommend, if somebody has a Windows 8 machine or a Windows 7 machine and it's working just fine, I don't necessarily recommend they move up to Windows 10, even though it might be a better experience. There's a couple reasons. Number one, they're going to try the upgrade themselves, and it may or may not work.
Yeah.
But you know, if I did it, you know, I can make sure it works and get everything right, set up properly and all that kind of stuff. But they're not going to do that. So they don't want to pay to have that done. So they'll just try it. And so I say, you know what? It's working. Just leave it the way it is. And we'll visit this down the road if you really feel that strongly about it, and we'll see what we can do. I said, or throw caution to the wind, do the upgrade, see if it works. If not, I'll come out and take care of it. Either way. So
yeah, I've had a customer totally hosed up their laptop.
Yeah.
And luckily, the only reason I was able to recover it is I had a backup image from about 18 months or 15 months before they had brought it to me with a virus.
Oh, okay.
Before I returned it, I had made an image of it just in case they brought it back. And I didn't intend on keeping that image for 15 months or whatever it was, but just never got around to erasing it. And I didn't need to. I didn't need the space on my external drive.
Right.
And I couldn't use the recovery partition or anything on this drive. It was totally hosed. And I said, oh, look at this. I was looking through the image archives and I was like, I still have an image of this from 15 months ago.
Well, you know,
and saved my bay. I don't know what I would have done. I mean, this customer didn't have the recovery discs. We would have had to have ordered them. This kid needed it for school.
Mm.
And the laptop was totally hosted. And so when I said, why did you had Windows 7. Why did you do the upgrade to Windows 10? Well, my friends have it. And my friends liked it.
Mm.
But what's it going to do for you that you weren't able to do before? I don't know. It was stupid. I don't know. I said, okay, that's all I wanted to know. So what I usually advise people is, look, a lot of people don't like Windows 8.1. If you're one of those people, you have Windows 8.1, you don't like it, I recommend you upgrade to Windows 10.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you have
point.
Windows 7, leave it alone, unless you don't like Windows 7. I haven't met that person who doesn't like Windows 7, who's used it and doesn't like it.
Right.
But I met plenty who don't like Windows 8, and I've met a handful who don't mind Windows 8. They come up to me after my presentations, they go, I don't get this. I have Windows 8, I don't see what the big deal is. I won't. That's great for you.
See, I've had a lot of pretty much all my customers. I've switched them from XP, 7, whatever, when they were buying new systems. I've had no problem switching anybody to 8. I don't know why. Maybe it's a demographic or whatever, but it just seemed like it. I taught them a couple things, took about 5 minutes and said, here's this, here's this, here's this. And they were going to town. It was no big deal.
Let me ask you this question on another subject. That's sure to polarize. What do you think of Apple's stance on refusing to decrypt that iPhone?
I think it's their obligation not to. I think you need to go through the regular court of law. And if you get a subpoena to get that information, that's one thing. If you don't, I don't know.
Here's the thing that gets me. Arizona State Attorney General. I got to look this up. Can't think of the guy's name. Bill Montgomery said that Apple does not have to decrypt the phone. It's their right to not do it. And it's our right as the department chief of the Maricopa County Attorney's Office to not issue iPhones anymore to any of our staff. And I just thought, you know, I have never, ever liked Apple. I would never wanted to buy an Apple product until now. Because I know how crappily Apple treats their customers. Apple says, you're going to do it our way, or you can take a hike. And the fact that Apple just told that to the government, suddenly now I have a newfound respect for Apple. It never existed before. Now I'm saying, well, if the government's that desperate, that's the phone I want. That's the best marketing campaign any money could buy, is for the government to admit that there's nothing they can do and that they won't use their phones. They won't use Apple's iPhone. They won't support this company, an American company, a legal American company that follows the American laws.
Right.
Because they won't play the game they want them to play. And if there's nothing that's ever happened in the history of my life, certainly since the iPhone has been introduced, that has made me even consider purchasing an iPhone until the government has made, the local Arizona government has made such a bold statement, that makes me want to go out and buy one. So I don't know if that just makes me a rebel or if it makes me a difficult person, but it's hard to believe all the marketing and hype, as we talked about, so much manipulation, made up words, empty promises that marketing companies are responsible for. I mean, how many times have you seen a movie trailer where the movie has, you know, been promised to be this great spectacular thing, and it's a dog?
Oh yeah,
they blatantly lie. In the, you know, Sony even went so far with A Knight's Tale, which I thought was a good movie. They made up two fake critics to give the movie false, fake, positive reviews.
Really interesting.
Yeah, you can Google that. And several years ago, and Sony got busted for it. And so here's, you know, we're extracting the marketing company out of it. I think, I mean, for all I know, maybe this is an ingenious marketing tactic on behalf of Apple, but I think it's awesome. And here's the thing I don't understand, and maybe you can explain it to me, but the people whose phones are trying to get open, aren't they dead?
That's my understanding.
So kind of beating a dead horse here.
I agree.
You can't punish them anymore.
I mean, the only thing I could think is that they're trying to get other information that could link them to somebody else in the group. I don't know.
See, this is what cracks me up. When you go to apply for a job and they want to do a background check.
Mm-hmm.
Like these folks had background checks before they got their jobs with Orange County or whatever they were in California.
Sure.
Whoever the employer was, they passed their background checks. When you go to buy a gun, there's a background check. And pass your background check.
Right.
Why? Because you haven't done anything. Why haven't you? Well, because you're not born a murderer. I mean, as far as I can tell, you don't just come out of the womb and start murdering people. You have to murder somebody first. So that may not happen for a while. So you could spend the first 40 years of your life being a well-defined, legal, honorable citizen. And then you just snap one day, or maybe your job's stressing you out, so you got to take the drugs. But the job drug tested you before you got the job, but you didn't have a job. You didn't have the money to buy the drugs. You didn't have the stress to need the drugs. So it's after you get the job, they need to be drug testing. Then you're working with some jackwagon who's making your life difficult, makes you want to go into the office and, you know, cause harm. And now suddenly They want to know who all your friends are. They want to then question everybody. But yet all these other people haven't done anything. This is not Minority Report. You know, you have to wait for somebody to commit it. So there's this issue of law enforcement that they're trying to get into law prevention or you know, law breaking prevention.
Right.
That doesn't exist. Police officers' jobs are to stop a crime in progress, period. There's nothing illegal about being suspicious. I can walk around looking suspicious all day. There's nothing illegal about that. So I'm a little confused as to why this is such a big deal when the people who are directly responsible for the actions, these horrible, horrible actions, cowardly actions, are dead. So to go after somebody who hasn't done anything yet doesn't make any sense to me. There's probably going to be another terrorist who hasn't done anything wrong yet. Depending, you know, they could be 20 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old, and they're just a regular law-abiding citizen like you and me until something happens. How do you predict that?
Right. Well, and it probably goes a little deeper than that. I would say if it was an actual sleeper cell, then they're not probably looking for, I mean, they might be looking for other groups here, but the problem is in normal sleeper cells, I mean, even since the Cold War, none of them have contact with each other anyways. Nobody knows who they are. So I think the information that they would be trying to get would be something overseas. That's the only reason I can think that they would even want that information. But
yeah, that's where I'm confused. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me that, you know, what's done is done.
Right.
And I can't see them preventing anything because they have access to this guy's phone. But I'm a simple man, so perhaps...
But it's great publicity.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, for Apple, I've never wanted to own an iPhone until now.
Give me an iPhone.
I don't even, you know, I have a flip phone. What do I worry about? But
you still have, wait a minute. No, you upgraded, didn't you?
My sister gave me her old LG G4. It's somewhere around here.
Are you still using a flip phone?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You are a simple man. I would rather stick a fork in my eye than use it. No, I'm just kidding. No, because you use it for phone calls, right? And it works for you.
I use my computer to get on the internet.
Yep. And we're talking over a VoIP system called Skype right now.
Using my computer.
Right. So what do you really need that phone for? Now,
I'll tell you, the honest truth is I'm addicted to the internet. I justify my addiction because it's what I do for a living.
Sure.
Hey, honey, I have to stay up late until midnight on the computer because I got to finish this article. I got to finish these invoices. There's this new article about Microsoft putting advertising on the lockout screen. I better put that on my Facebook page. That's hot news. And now it's 2:00 in the morning. If I had a smartphone, I would never look up from it.
That's a good point.
I would wonder how I ever live without it.
Oh, yeah.
I know once I have it, I'm going to say to myself, oh my God, how did I ever get along without it? So I'm trying to put that off as much as possible because I will be one of those people. I like to be able to, when I do finally peel myself off the chair from sitting in front of the computer for hours on end, be in the present with the people I'm in the room with.
Absolutely.
No, and it drives me nuts to have people texting and such. When we're supposed to be spending time together, I don't mind a text here and there, but when it's just constant, it seems to me you'd rather be somewhere else.
Right.
And I had an interesting conversation with a millennial, and many millennials, it's not important for them to have their driver's license. And this shocks me. And I think the reason is, you know, when you and I were growing up, our key to freedom was the car.
Right.
But with the phones, the smartphones, you can go anywhere you want to go. It's in the palm of your hand.
That's true.
You don't need the car anymore. You can visit virtually anywhere you want to go. Talk to people from all over the world. You don't have to go outside. And I think that's the conversation I had was pretty interesting. I'm going to call him a kid. Kid was saying that. Can't wait for autonomous cars. People do not drive well. We were not intended. His theory is that we were not intended to drive cars. And his proof for that was that because of how many people die every year. And I said, well, I'm going to disagree with you. driving a car is an incredibly simple thing to do. It is such a simple thing to do. All you really have to do is pay attention.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is so boring. And I said, you know, and this is going to sound like an old man. So when I was growing up, you could give me a stick and I would have to entertain myself with that stick. It required me to use my imagination. The stick could be a gun. The stick could be a cane. Could be whatever my imagination wanted it to be. But it seems like this generation, they don't have to use their imagination. It's done for them. So they're constantly being entertained. All different types of sources of entertainment where you don't sit by yourself in a room just alone with your thoughts anymore. Kids aren't doing that. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just an observation. But sitting and driving in a car requires you to be in with yourself, not looking at your phone, not playing with the stereo. I mean, I enjoy the music when I'm driving, but not to the point where, you know, my eyes are off the road for 5 minutes and I'm in a ditch somewhere.
Right. Exactly.
And then he chalked it up to something that I've said. This kid was the only one who's ever said this. I've always been the one to say this. He says, I think this is why people die. Because as we get older, we start to refuse the change that the next generation brings in. And so that acts as an obstacle to that change and slows the progress and the evolution of the race and, you know, of humanity. And I just smiled at this kid and I go, that's exactly what I've said to my own father. I said, I understand now why people die. Because if people didn't die, there'd be people protesting modern science as witchcraft. The horse and buggy never caused the emissions problems and drunk driving deaths that automobiles do or horseless carriages. And, you know, depending on how far back you want to go, there'll be people just completely opposed as we get older. And it's frustrating to hear myself say some of the things I hear myself say, knowing what the younger me would have said if I had heard that.
Right.
So I don't know. I just find it interesting that in this kid's mind, autonomous cars would be a utopia. And to me, it's a nightmare. To me, it's like, all right, let me ask you a question. Let's say you're in your autonomous car. You're coming around a blind corner at a high rate of speed. And some kids think it'll be funny to push their friend out in the road, knowing that all the cars on the road are autonomous and they'll have to steer around you or steer around the obstacle in the road. The car has to make a decision now to go off the side of the cliff and kill the occupants of the car, or to continue its path and just hit the brakes and attribute whatever damage results in the lives that were in that road that it didn't avoid. And his answer to me was, well, by then they'll have imagery that'll be able to read so far ahead that wouldn't be an issue. Okay. You know, all right.
Well, maybe. At least he's thinking.
No, it's possible.
Sure.
But, you know, it leads to these dilemmas. How does it decide who to kill?
Right. No, exactly.
How does the machine decide that? And we talked to you about a technical problem I had because it's baffling.
Oh, I've had a couple of those.
the hardest technical problems I've ever had to solve are always with my own computer over the years.
Mm.
Have you realized, does that happen to you too?
Yeah. As soon as you share your story, I got one for you.
My video editing machine. I haven't edited some videos in a while. I said, okay, I want to start editing some videos. And as I start to edit, I'm using CyberLink PowerDirector.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty basic program, but it gives me all the bells, whistles, and features I need for my pretty simple videos. And it starts crashing on me. Just be editing, and all of a sudden the whole system crashes. I get a dialog box. Application closed, and sometimes when you open it back up, it'll try and recover. Other times, it just lost its memory.
Okay.
So I can bring it back from the last save point, which when you're doing video editing, it's tedious. You got to get down to the millisecond of where you want your cut. So now every time I make a cut, I'm saving. Cut, save, cut, save.
Right.
And it starts crashing more and more often. It got to the point where I couldn't even import media files anymore. And I said, okay, let's check my RAM. What's going on with my RAM? Ran Memtest 86. RAM's fine. This is a Haswell processor, 16 gigs of RAM. system was built specifically for video editing. My 3 terabyte Western Digital hard drive and a Samsung 500 gig SSD. And no other software, really. Handbrake for video conversion, Camtasia for video screen capture. They've got a capture card with the software with that. And the PowerDirector. So I upgrade to a new version of PowerDirector. It does the same thing. And it's to a point where you go to import the media files, and it says the media files are invalid or damaged or corrupt. So I wipe the system clean and do a fresh install of Windows 7. Reinstall all the drivers, all the latest. It's an NVIDIA, I think a GTX 550 Ti or something. Latest drivers. It seems like every 3 weeks NVIDIA's got a new driver.
Yeah, pretty much.
New drivers for the capture card from StarTech. That software starts and then it crashes. No longer does the capture card work. So I said, okay, that's not important right now. Let's just get the PowerDirector up and running. Get PowerDirector 13, load that up there, make sure it's fully updated. System crashes. I put in PowerDirector 12. Let's go back a version. We're back to files that it was reading. You can't read these files. It says these files are corrupt, or I don't know what they are, but they're not video files. So, do you want to do the free upgrade to Windows 10? Yes. Okay, I'll do it.
Desperate times calls for desperate measures.
And now it's back to just crashing once in a great while.
Huh.
So I was able to finally get some editing done and get a video up after 2 months because I had been putting this off and I was so frustrated and angry with it. What do you think? What's going on?
Now, did you test the hard drive?
Did I test the hard drive? It's a solid state drive. It's got the Samsung Magician software on it.
Okay.
Says it's in good health.
Okay.
All the other applications.
Well, you said you had a 3 terabyte hard drive on there also, right?
That's a storage drive.
Okay. Did you test that one?
Yeah, I ran Crystal Disk Info on it and it reads fine. No problems.
Okay.
And the files that PowerDirector 12 says it can't read because they're either corrupt or a damaged format open up just fine in PowerDirector 13.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Maybe there's a SATA cable. Maybe a hard drive's flaking out.
Right.
So I moved the data files off of my storage drive onto my solid state. So I was working strictly off the solid state only.
Mm-hmm.
No difference. This was prior to the upgrade to Windows 10. Because I thought, well, maybe I've just got so many files. I mean, I've got tons of files on that 3 terabyte drive. What would happen is I'd open up Windows Explorer. Again, before I installed Windows 10, I'd open up Windows Explorer, click on the D drive. That's my 3 terabyte storage drive. And as it would populate the list of files, Windows Explorer is crashed. Unknown error. Close, and it would close. So not a blue screen, but an application error message that would shut down Windows Explorer. And it would open it, repeat, and then finally it would display finally. And then I'd click on something, then it would crash again.
Interesting.
Now, after the upgrade to Windows 10, I can explore Windows Explorer. You know, I can explore the D drive, no problems. The PowerDirector program still crashes, but it's back to crashing, you know, every 45 minutes instead of every 45 seconds.
Yeah, so, man. So I had a similar issue on my primary machine. And the reason I upgraded to a new machine, pretty much for the most part, my computer's on 24/7. Okay, I built a machine three years and one month ago, and had a Core i7 processor. Can't remember which one it was. Haswell, I think. And 32 gigabytes of RAM, Asus motherboard, 780 GTX video card. Running fine, runs games, no problem. And it would just sit here, and every once in a while I'd go back in. And it doesn't go to sleep. It doesn't hibernate, nothing. It's on constantly. But what I do is the monitors will blacken out, and I'll go in and I'll shake the mouse and go back on there. Well, I would go to launch a browser or any type of EXE. Even sometimes I couldn't even get the start menu to come up. It was just like lagging. And I'm like going, okay, this is really weird. And the only way I could get it to restart, even if I got back to the login screen by logging out, it wouldn't let me press the power button to restart the machine. So I had to physically use the power reset switch on my case to reset it. And this happened several times during 1 week. And I'm like going, okay, this is usually the start of a problem. Now, this is it's not a video editing machine. It's my primary machine that I live off of. And I'm like, okay.
Which in my case is my video editing machine.
Okay. All right. Same difference. So I'm like, now what do I do? So I run same thing, Crystal Disk Info. I run the memory test. There's a little button on the motherboard. You hold it in on startup. It goes through checks the RAM. Did the memory diagnostic for Windows for the RAM. Checks it, comes back clean. I do the tech USB where it checks the hard drives, it checks the RAM, processor, all that stuff. Everything comes back clean. Okay. This keeps happening. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what the problem is. My sneaking suspicion is, because I did extended tests using Western Digital Software or Seagate or whatever on the hard drives. Same thing, Samsung 850 Evo, Magician software shows everything's fine. I don't see any errors or anything there. Everything seems super clean. So my sneaking suspicion in this particular case is something's going wrong with the motherboard. And it's at a level, I'm checking capacitors, all that kind of stuff. It's at a level that I don't see anything wrong with it. And I don't think it's a cable issue, like a SATA cable or anything like that. I think there's I think the motherboard's 3 years old.
Maybe when you were installing it, you was a little electrostatic shock.
Yeah, maybe 3 years
ago. That's actually how static damage appears years after the fact.
Right. And these things, you have a 3-year warranty on them, right? So the motherboard, I'm looking at it and I go, yeah, okay. Everything seems to be working fine, but I just don't know. So it ran Windows 7. That same system ran Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 10. So it's not the operating system. I've ran all three on there, no problem. So I basically went and built a new machine. And I still stuck with the, I got 32 gigs of RAM, the DDR4. I got an Asus X99 Deluxe. And
With the Haswell E, huh?
With the Haswell E, the middle of the road one, not the $1,000 processor. Of course, it was $600. But anyways, $589. And a 980 GTX Ti.
Nice.
So
I wouldn't kick your computer out of bed for eating crackers.
I'll tell you, it was funny because before we got on the show, I was actually editing the live show that we did before this. And when I was using Adobe Audition, it would take me 17 minutes with my old Haswell. It would 17 minutes to mix down an audio file and mix everything together. It would take me 17 minutes. On this new machine, it took me, for the same amount of time, it's about an hour podcast, it took me 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Wow. Now, here's a question. When you first installed your Samsung SSD, as I recall, you didn't notice any significant speed improvement, and then you turn on a feature, what's it called? It's like a write cache, or not. It turns a cache feature on.
Yeah, there's one...
But since Windows 8 and Windows 10, the Samsung Magician software no longer supports that feature on Windows 8 or Windows 10. So I'm curious, since you didn't see the benefit of the SSD until you turned that feature on, knowing that feature doesn't exist for you anymore with your love of Windows 10 and Windows 8.1, I mean, you must still be seeing a speed benefit to the SSD because you continue to purchase a new one and use it.
Yeah. The only thing that doesn't work for me is the performance benchmark on Windows 8 and Windows 10. Everything else works. So I can do the one is called Rapid something or other.
That Rapid doesn't work.
No, it works in mine.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. It were actually, I have two. I have an 840 Evo and I have an 850 Pro, and it works in both my machines.
On Windows 10?
Yes. They're both running Windows 10. Yep. Rapid mode is enabled. yeah, the only thing that doesn't work is the actual, what is it? The performance optimization, I think.
Should be the backwards. Performance optimization should work in enabling the...
No, because here's the reason. So I'm reading it right now. So the reason is because this has been my opinion of the newer operating systems as they have come about, is that it's basically that performance optimization had some things also to do with trim. And Windows 8 and Windows 10, even Windows 7, really did, in my opinion, such a phenomenal job when SSDs were first coming out, that with the trim and all that kind of stuff, that it really, these systems, it's amazing what they do and how well they actually run with all the different things that you have going on in the background. So I just, you probably don't need it on Windows 8 or Windows 10 anymore.
No, but when I go into the Samsung software, which I think version 4.95 is the latest as we're recording this, the rapid mode feature is grayed out and says it is not compatible with Windows 8 or 10.
Really?
Yeah. That's why I'm sitting here scratching my head.
You know, last time we talked, didn't we have I was showing you my bench tests and you were like going, no, they can't be that high. And
I was saying you should be getting a 550 megabyte per second. What are you getting? You said I'm getting 6,000. Like, no, you're not getting 6,000. Well, yeah, because it takes 2 megs of cache, 2 megs of your RAM.
Right.
And uses it as cache because you've enabled a feature called rapid mode. I never delved that deeply into the Samsung Magician software to realize that some of the systems that I built use the Pro version. So with the Pro version of the 840, you had the option of rapid mode. So the drive that I have in one of my systems, it was grayed out because the drive simply didn't support it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But now that I found it and I turned it on, it was on in Windows 7 on my video editing machine. Now it's saying, since I've gone to Windows 10, I can't turn that feature back on, that it's not supported in Windows 10. That's why I'm scratching my head again going, you seem to be doing things where I go, you can't do that. And you're like, well, I'm doing it. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm doing something wrong then. So this is going to require a little more investigation.
All right. I'm looking for
the rapid mode.
I got 4.9.5.
Yeah. Okay. 4.95.
All right.
Yeah. And rapid mode is not grayed out for you on Windows 10.
No, it's enabled right now. No, it's not grayed out. It's all
on. But
you
do have the Pro version.
I've got the 850 Pro, but it also works on the 840 Evo.
Yeah. I'd have to send you a screenshot so you can see I'm not making it up.
No, I believe you. I'm curious why that, because again, the other one, the optimization one, for whatever reason, doesn't work on mine. And I was like, okay. And that says right on there, it doesn't work with Windows 8 or Windows 10. Or I think it says Windows 8 and above. So
Samsung says not to use rapid mode in Windows 10.
I wonder why.
Thank you for contacting Samsung support. Magician 4.7 is an intermediary release. Do not use rapid mode as we're still working on how to optimally take advantage of the new RAM management features built into 10. So
maybe it doesn't need it?
There's a video on YouTube where someone shows how to force it. And they said, but since they did that, they've had 3 blue screens of death.
Interesting. Okay.
So I don't know. I'm sorry I mentioned anything now, because through this whole process of rebuilding my machine on the software side, you know, installing the Windows 10, then making sure that I have the latest of everything to reduce the likelihood of any of these crashes occurring. It seemed to me, since a couple versions ago, since like 4.7, and then certainly with the latest 4.95, that the Samsung Magician software is saying that rapid mode is not available in Windows 8.1 or 10.
You know, I'm curious, because when I did the maximum performance on using the Magician software, to be honest with you, doing that, I could actually do that throughout the Windows system. I don't really need Magician on it to do any of that stuff. I'm wondering, what's the benefit of having Magician installed?
A couple things. Okay. One is you can verify the authenticity of your drive, that it's not a knockoff.
Okay, good point.
Two, it'll show you the number of bytes that have been written to the drive over its lifespan. This is important on a solid-state drive because it has a finite number of writes, depending on what kind of memory your solid-state drive has, TLC, MLC, or there's another one.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And we can get into all that, but basically there's the cheap stuff that's fast but dies quickly. There's the mid-price stuff that has a little bit longer of a lifespan. It's not quite as fast. And there's the other stuff that's much, much longer lifespan, nowhere near as fast. And so they end up doubling it so that it reads and writes on two lanes. And so it makes up for the speed difference. Anyway, it's supposed to be superior as far as storage goes, as far as the amount of writes.
Okay.
And I can't remember which one's which.
Do you know what the max is?
The max what?
Max writes on any of these drives. Is there an average, or is it just different for each one?
It's going to depend on whether or not it's TLC. If you Google SSD TLC lifespan.
Right.
That would be the Samsung 840 is the first widely available SSD that uses the TLC type memory.
Okay.
So if you just Google that and said, okay, what kind of lifespan can we see for, you know, what kind of endurance does TLC NAND offer us? It's, okay, so there's SLC, which does 1 bit per cell, MLC does 2 bits per cell, and TLC does 3 bits per cell.
Okay.
So SLC reads in 25 US. I don't know what US is. It's a measurement I've never heard of. Must be like a millisecond. It must be smaller than a millisecond. The MLC is 50 US, TLC is 75 US.
Okay.
Erase time on an SLC is 1.5 to 2 milliseconds. On an MLC, it's 3 milliseconds. On a TLC, it's 4.5 milliseconds. So the TLC is a lot slower, but it's a lot more, the amount of data that it can hold. So NAND capacity is about, on a TLC drive, anywhere from 11.7 to 23.4 years, averaging 10 gigabytes of writes per day.
Okay. Interesting.
So if you wrote 20 gigabytes a day, the estimated lifespan would be halved, although you're still looking at several years. Even with 30 gigabytes of writes per day, the 256 gig TLC drive should be sufficient in terms of endurance. Write amplification can also go over 10 times if your workload is heavily random write centric, but that's more common on the enterprise side. Client workloads are usually much lighter. And anyway, so with the Samsung Magician, you can see how much data has been written to that drive, which ultimately shouldn't matter unless you're a seriously heavy user. And I mean, like, beyond anybody's wildest imagination. And the other thing is, it lets you know immediately if there's firmware updates. Now, I don't know if you've ever had to do a firmware upgrade on a non-Samsung branded SSD, especially the early ones from like OCZ.
No, I haven't. Just on,
but you couldn't
ones.
Flash the drive while it was in use as your main bootable drive. If it was a slave drive, a secondary drive, no problem. But as a boot drive, you would have to reboot into a special Linux distribution, CD, DVD, or flash drive, which then would connect you to the internet, and then you could get your firmware update, assuming there was one available. You'd have to check manually for that. Samsung Magician software will just pop up and go, hey, there's a new firmware update. Would you like it? Yes, I would. Boom, it's flashed. It'll give you the standard boilerplate warning that you should back up all your data. This could erase everything. I've never seen it erase anything ever.
Right, right.
And it's painless. And then you reboot, and your computer detects a new hard drive.
Nice.
Process is done. Then you've got rapid mode. So rapid mode, if you have over 8 gigs of RAM, it'll take 2 gigs of that RAM and use it for caching data back and forth.
Okay.
And that's what gave you that 6,000 megabytes per second instead of the 550. And it's what you said made the big difference to you when we talked before about, you know, that you were ultimately disappointed with the performance of your new solid state drive. You'd never used one before or had put one in your own system before. And that when you enabled that rapid mode, suddenly you were like, ah, that's what everybody's talking about.
Right.
Well, and I said, what the heck is rapid mode? And now I'm sorry I figured out what it is, because now it got taken away from me. Right. And now I'm sitting here back to square one going, well, it doesn't work in Windows 10. Like, yeah, it does. And I'm like, okay, here we go again.
I don't know. The thing is, I can really tell a difference.
But rapid mode is different from the performance. So your performance settings are in a different box. Also, the Samsung Magician software on the Pro series, you can enable encryption on the drive.
Ah, okay.
And for some people, that's a pretty big deal.
Right. Good to know.
So yeah, lots of, I always tell people, these solid state drives are all pretty much the same now when it comes to performance and even price. But the reason I keep going back to Samsung is the great warranty. I've never seen a bad one. Have you seen a bad Samsung solid state drive?
No, I haven't. Not yet.
Yeah, neither have I.
I wonder if it's because of they're not being used as much right now, or if it's just that both of mine that I've been using for the last couple of years were working great. I was looking at the total bytes written. So in the last 90 days, I wrote on this drive 4.39 terabytes. I don't know if that's a lot or a little or whatever, but.
Well, you're basically looking at 4,390 gigabytes.
Okay. Gotcha.
So over 90 days, if you divide that by 90, you could get your average per day. You're not at 10 gigabytes a day.
Gotcha. Okay.
And again, at 10 gigabytes a day with the TLC memory, again, you're looking between 12 and 24 years. I actually retired the first set of solid state drives I installed for one of my customers. And the customer says, can I have those to put in my safe? I said, absolutely. So I replaced a 64 gig drives with 256 gigs SSDs. And that was probably 4 years they had those drives.
Nice.
I haven't seen one fail.
Okay. It's good to know. I stick with what it's same thing. Western Digital black drives. I stick with those. I put the HGSTs in the laptops, because I can get the 1 terabyte 7,200 RPM. And I haven't had a problem with either one of those.
I see about the same failure rate on Samsung and Western Digital drives. They're 601, half dozen of the other to me. But in fact, even the warranty return process, all interchangeably the same.
Yeah.
From where I'm standing. What I don't like is on the Western Digital 2 terabyte blacks, they've removed the little part of the plastic around the SATA port that allows the SATA connector to clip with the metal clip and lock in. It's gone. Initially, I thought maybe the drive I got was defective or broken. Then I got another one, same problem. So the cable just falls right off.
You know what? I was wondering the other day, I actually use a right angle SATA cable.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, because you're right, it doesn't clip in.
It's only the Western Digital 2 terabytes.
Yeah.
Black editions that I've seen do that.
Interesting, because I
know you know why they put that clip on, right? You know that initially that SATA cable did not come with a clip,
right?
And the manufacturers were complaining, Dells and HPs, because they'd ship their computers and the cables would fall off.
Sure.
Oh, we better put a clip on it. Okay. Now you can pick that hard drive up. You can pick the whole computer up by that SATA cable. That's how strong that clip is.
Right.
So why would they suddenly remove it?
It's a good point.
So if there's a reason for me to stay away from Western Digital 2 terabyte blacks, that's it right there.
Gotcha.
I don't, until I hear a reason for this, I've haven't had the time to pursue it, but I would certainly love to get somebody on the phone from Western Digital and say, explain this to me. Again, I question everything. Everything's got to make sense. It has to make sense. It's like that USB 3 external umbilical on the case. It's a great big connector. It's got nothing that holds it in place. Don't we know by now that we need some sort of a clip on every cable? But it's like we just keep going back and revisiting the past. It's like Groundhog's Day over and over again. Remember that movie, Groundhog's Day?
Oh, yeah. Classic.
and the other one, what was the other one?
There was like Groundhog's
Day? No. There's another thing where we're taking a step backwards. I'm trying to think what it was now. I just had it. Look, we've been through this. We know these cables need to have clips to lock them into place. So I know what I was going to go with. The new USB 3.1 Type-C connector. you know, USB, just the regular old square style USB, what is it called? Type B, the rectangular.
Yep.
Only goes in one way, right?
Correct.
Well, it can only go in one of two possible ways. And yet it always takes three attempts before you get it right. So now they've figured out, you know what? We don't need to make this connector this big to begin with. So then they got the type C connector, and the connector will plug in either direction.
Okay.
Huh? How long it take us to get there?
Right.
20 years?
But what we had was working so well. It gave those people that were never getting any exercise, it gave them plenty of exercise flipping their wrist around.
Maybe gave them carpal tunnel. Oh, maybe it aggravated their arthritis. You know, the thing is
get off my lawn.
How many, yeah, I know, right? How many adapters do you have, you know, to go from micro USB to, you know, and now it's like, why didn't we just make it small to begin with? I don't know. That's a good idea.
You know, my concern is because it's like on the smartphones or the tablets, those stupid small connectors, they break so easily. It's ridiculous. So my concern is
the connectors break, and I've had the cables break on me, but not the connector.
Yeah. I get people that call me all the time and, hey, you replace connectors inside the phone or tablet.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're just made cheaply. When you actually tear them apart and look at them, you're like, I don't know how you can push anything in there. Cause it looks like if you look at it wrong, it'll break. I mean, there's nothing to them.
Well, you know, that leads to an email that just came in coincidentally while you and I have been speaking. It says, basically this guy writes in and says, I'm dreaming of setting up my own computer repair shop locally, and I've been having a hard time of doing it. And I've heard this a couple of times, so I want to ask someone I can trust the answer from. Is the computer repair business dying?
I love that question. Isn't that
a great question?
It's a great question.
Let me tell you what happened, Jeff. I've been sick all week, as I mentioned. I've been fighting the flu. And do you know that nobody came to my door while I was sick and offered to give me some money? My phone wasn't ringing off the hook with people offering me job opportunities. In fact, that when I stopped hustling, my business ground to a stop.
Mm, yep.
So if you think that you open a shop and people are just going to come to you, you're going to be in for a world of hurt, because no business runs that way. And there are a number of chefs. Their dreams are to open their own restaurant. And while they might be excellent chefs, most of them have no idea how to run a restaurant. And running a restaurant is no different than running any other business, including being a computer repair tech. If you have the best food at the best prices, there's seating always available, it's because nobody knows you exist. So how do you get people to know you exist? Well, that's what marketing is for. You spend money on marketing.
Right.
And then there gets to be a level of marketing where it goes so far where I mentioned, you know, the marketing company is just making up words and making up reasons for the public to have something. I was at the Consumer Electronics Show many, many years ago, and I was at line for food. I said, you guy says, how are you doing? I said, I'm good. How's your day going? He goes, not so good. I just caught a guy trying to steal my product out of my booth. And I said, you're upset by that? He goes, you don't think I should be? I said, no, didn't you come here to create a desire for your product? What more desire could you possibly create than for somebody to want to steal it? That's a great compliment to you. You've succeeded. And he kind of smiled because, you know, I didn't think of it that way.
That's a good analogy.
You know, when kids were killing each other to take the kids' shoes, his Air Jordans, that's one heck of a marketing campaign where people are killing each other for material objects. That really happened.
Right.
I mean, it was a real epidemic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that is the power of marketing. So what tools does a guy like you and me have for marketing? Well, we have word of mouth. We make sure that we take care of every customer. And correct me if I'm stepping on your toes here, but I'm assuming you take care of them the same way I take care of mine, which is you make sure that you set their expectation and that you meet or exceed the expectation that you set. And they're going to have you're going to have a happy customer every single time you do that. So when you set an expectation that you didn't meet, that's when you have an unhappy customer.
Right.
And an unhappy customer, I'm told, will tell 40 people, and a happy customer will tell one.
Right.
So then you have to give incentives to your customers to talk about you. And usually what I do, I was always very uncomfortable with selling. I don't like pressuring people. So what I learned to do is say, all right, you know, is everything good? You're happy? Yes. Okay. I collect my check. Thank you. Now, here's a couple cards, business cards. They don't ask me for them. I just go, here's a couple, 3, 4, 5. And that way you can lose a couple, you know, stick one in a drawer, take one, stick it on the refrigerator, stick one behind the computer. If you know somebody who needs any computer repair work, I don't do any advertising. All of my advertising is word of mouth. I sure would appreciate it. Never once has anybody said, no, take your business cards. I don't want them.
Right.
Sometimes people have said, could I have a few more? You can have the whole box. No. I just want a few more. I said, no, listen, I just want you to know. Ordering business cards is my favorite thing to do because that means I've given out all my business cards.
Right.
So if you're going to do that for me, the computer lab at one of these retirement centers that I speak at has a stack of my business cards in their computer lab. And when the local computer guru doesn't know something, he says, call Carrie. And many of these people, they don't know who I am. They didn't see me at my presentation at their senior center, but they were at the computer lab in the senior center. They had a problem. They said, talk to this guy. He'll take care of you. And because I've done so much work in that community, I don't need to sell myself. They do it for me. So no, the computer business is not dying. But yes, if you think that the business is just going to come to you automatically and you're not going to have to do anything because there's just so much of it out there to get, there's no business that I'm aware of like that.
Exactly. I agree 100%.
You know, you have just the opposite problem too, where like, let's say you're an air conditioning repairman and you're in Phoenix. Business is good, right? Can you imagine how much competition you've got?
Mm-hmm.
Then on the other hand, you got a guy who lives in Podunk, Ohio, and it's a little town. Well, you know, there's no business here because there's just nobody here. Yeah, but there's no competition either. So I don't buy that. I don't buy that there's no business there. And then I was reading on one of the forums where this guy was complaining about a customer who he had got because he posted, or maybe whatever, they called and said they were price shopping. And he was really disappointed. The topic of the conversation was, when do I let a client go? At what point do they become a liability where it's not worth servicing them? And I advised this client, they deal with personal data. They're not with FINRA standards and they're not this, that, and the other. And he wrote this thing for like 4 messages. And I said, you could have stopped right after you said the reason why the customer contacted you was they were pricing around. Because a lot of people think you're going to get there with cheap prices. But I have a new Carrieism for you. Cheap prices attract cheap customers.
Oh my gosh, that is so mind-blowing, stunning. I've only been saying that for the last couple of years, Carrie.
Oh, well, maybe subconsciously. Geez, for a minute there, I thought you were being serious. Maybe I've heard you say it in the podcast, and maybe it just didn't register with me, but it registered when I read this particular thing. He went on for 4 pages of this whole situation where he did the an asset management thing for this client, and they didn't have any money right now, and da-da-da-da-da. And as soon as, you know, the first line was there, that the reason he got the job was they were calling around looking for somebody that was cheap. He got the job because he was cheap. Then he's frustrated that they won't spend the money to put a proper router in, a business router, and they're, in his opinion, woefully unprepared for doing the line of work that they're doing, and he's concerned about liability now.
Yeah. That's the thing. You want to make money, and I've said that a lot of people out there will just do whatever to, pardon my French, but whore themselves out to basically just do whatever for anybody for whatever price. And there's no reason for that. There's plenty of good customers out there. My favorite customers are the ones that call up and I've never met them before. They say they have a computer problem. Can I fix it? I say, yes. When can I drop it off? I say it this time. They drop it off, fix it. I give them an invoice. They pay me. End of story. Done. Now, the ones that are sitting there going, well, that seems like a lot of money. That's not my customer. Sorry.
They got a lot of time on their hands. So let's say, so if you put yourself on the other person's shoes, they have a very limited amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably not working. They need to make that dollar go as far as possible. So if you're going to work for them, they're going to make you work statistically. They're going to make you work harder than somebody who's really busy and doesn't have time to sit there and micromanage you and worry about what you're doing. They just go, look, this computer has to work. I've got work to do. If I can't get work to do, I can't make money. So you have these two diametrically opposed types of customers. And there's, you know, for the one, psychologically, they both think their computer's the most important thing in the world.
Yep.
But one is using the computer to make money, and one is using the computer solely to buy their time until they die, or to just take them to the next meal or their next life's distraction.
Right.
Now, I won't get into the psychology of the why, or, you know, there could be physical reasons. There may be mental reasons. There may be a ton of other reasons why. But the reality is these are these two types of people. Now, their money is just as green. So whether I charge this person 125 and I charge that person, it's the same 125. The difference is if the person on the left is very busy, then they're going to be more likely to get back on with, you know, doing whatever it was they were doing before you ever cross paths. The other people might just call you every single time a question enters their mind from that point forward, and you'll regret ever working on their computer ever again, or having done it in the first place. And then you're just avoiding that phone. You're just like, oh, it's that customer again. I don't want to answer it. Or I have to tell this customer I can help you, but I need to charge you. And then they're going to be all ticked off because they're going to feel like I gave you business. This is how you thank me for giving you business. They're going to act like they did you the favor. Do you ever get that? Do you ever get customers act like they did you the favor?
Yep. You know what I get rid of those customers? I raise my prices.
Well, I think that's the best way. It's to simply ask yourself one question. How much would this person have to pay me for me to put up with this?
Absolutely.
And there's a number.
There's no doubt about that. Everybody has a price.
And yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, you know what? From now on, my rates. You know who did that? That Martin Shkreli guy, the pharmacist kid, CEO, pharmacist bro.
I don't remember that one.
He raised the price of this medication for HIV patients. His company bought the company that makes this medication, and they raised the price 5,000% overnight. Was an $11 pill or a $7 pill, and it went up to some ridiculous $500 a pill or something ridiculous. And he spent $2 million on a Wu-Tang album. Wu-Tang, this group, released one copy of this album. One copy. He bought it for $2 million. After he justified raising the price of this drug for people who need it, because, hey, we need that money for research and development for other drugs, he spent $2 million on something he didn't need. So his attorney raised his rate and said, I'm $60,000 an hour. And Martin Shkreli said, that's just outrageous. And the guy said, hey, you pay $2 million for an hour of Wu-Tang's music, I'd say it's a bargain.
That's awesome.
Is that cool or what?
It is cool.
So here's an attorney. Here's another level so far beyond where you and I are financially. That's how the attorney dealt with it.
Right.
So if it's good enough for an attorney who charges, you know, makes millions and millions of dollars, and works in that high of a level of the industry, sounds like a pretty good practice for you and I.
Yep. Well, and the other thing too, it will keep you sane. I just see a lot of people out there, and I've talked about this many, many times, but a lot of people just out there chasing every little thing they can. And it's like, and then they come home, they're frustrated, they don't get any sleep, they're wore out, and they don't understand why. And I look at them outside looking in. I understand when you're in the situation, it's tough, right? Because you're not really thinking with all cylinders. You're just kind of going through the motions, trying to make it through the day.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get people to step back and go, okay, this is not worth my aggravation in shortening my life to do this with this customer anymore. I'm just going to go find some customer. I'm going to find one customer to replace the two bad customers, make the same amount of money with less time involved.
Exactly. And people think that, well, you know, how do you do that? That's not possible. You're just lucky. Well, yeah, there's some luck that's involved in it. But look at the techs that have changed careers that you and I both know.
Yep.
I mean, how about Steve Cherubino? Great tech. He ain't doing it no more.
Yep.
How about what was the guy's name? Michael something created the Dial-A-Fix. It was a great utility. Remember Dial-A-Fix?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he was so fed up with the industry. He's like, I'm going into finance.
Right.
He started working on Wall Street. He was so done with being abused by customers and felt like he was being taken advantage of and just had reached the wall. And ideally, you never hit that wall. Because if you do, then we lose another great tech. So, I mean, that's just two right off the top of my head. And I'm sure if I sat or thought about it, I'd probably think of a dozen more guys that were really, really sharp and just said, you know what? Now I'm done with this.
Well, I'll give you a number, and I've said this number in the podcast in the past, but when I first started this podcast up almost 2 years ago, I basically had contacted 300 business owners and or technicians that had been on the previous Podnets Daily shows. And 75% of them were no longer doing this business.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So in his,
why do you think that is?
Because people are there. I think they're misled sometimes by different people in the industry, but also by their own, what they're willing to put up with. And they don't know that every decision you make is totally 100% up to you. You can make good decisions, bad decisions. And what I would always do is look at people around me to figure out, what are other people doing that's working for them? And can I make this work for me? And there were certain jobs, certain types of jobs that I said, you know what? I'm not doing those. I don't do screen repairs on tablets. Why? Right. Not because I can't. I can. Don't want to. Takes too much time and effort.
You could make an arrangement with somebody else.
Absolutely.
Back and forth. But do you think that people just were disheartened with the amount of money they were making? Or do you think that they were tired of being treated like dirt by the customers, or do you think it's a combination of both?
Probably a combination of both. But here's what I still see today. I see a lot of people that are running around 100 hours plus a week in making minimum wage.
Yes.
And so when you're doing that year after year after year, that would be frustrating. And eventually I would get to the point where I could probably go be a manager at a fast food chain and make more money than I'm making in my computer repair business.
I've also heard this is the worst possible time to become a police officer because nobody trusts you. Everybody's filming everything and you're going to be scrutinized for everything you say and do. I've also been told this is not a good time to get into the car business. Everything's being outsourced and manufactured overseas. Bossman told this is not a good, you know, you can put it in wherever you want to put it in.
Yep, absolutely.
Not a good time to be a teacher. Not a good time to become a mailman. They're talking about ending mail service on Saturdays. It's not a good time to whatever it is. It's not a good time. It's almost like that's the mantra for whatever the career is. And because we're in computers, we hear it about the PC repair business dying. And yet, as far as I know, every article that has been written about the PC repair business dying has been written on a PC.
that's a good analogy right there. It's like,
that's,
wait a minute,
clickbait. That's what that is, right? That's just right. Clickbait. They want you to click on it because that's what's going to generate the views. Doesn't really matter if it's right or accurate.
Right. Absolutely.
That's the world we live in. You know, what gets reported ultimately isn't necessarily what's accurate, but what's going to generate the most amount of clicks.
Right.
And so it's frustrating for me. I'd say, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this. This gentleman writes in, says, I'm thinking of owning my own computer repair shop. But I would say you probably don't want to go into the business if that's the attitude you're going into it with. If there's any hesitation, if there's any doubt, it's going to be very hard for you. You've got to be confident. And you've got to be positive and you've got to know what you're doing is right. And I think no matter what it is, I mean, how many parents have told their kids, don't be an actor. Don't be a musician. And yet for the ones who are successful, you know, I'm sure if you talk to Mick Jagger's parents, they'll say they're very proud of him, or David Bowie's parents, or, you know, icons that have changed culture.
Right.
In those industries. Yes, the chances of success are very low. Same with March Madness going to be happening with basketball. Very few of those kids are going to get into the big leagues. But gosh darn it, they're going to try.
Right.
And same with baseball and football. It's so many people. It's so competitive. Is it worth, is it worth trying for the NFL? I mean, because if one out of every 100 people that make it to that level gets selected, what chances do I have? With that attitude, none.
Good point.
So there's a big thing in society today where people are afraid to fail. People will say to me, I'm thinking about building my own computer and you make it look real easy on your videos, but I'm still really afraid that I'll screw it up. And to them I say, if you follow along with my video and everything works exactly the way I showed you on the video, you learn nothing. All you did was verify what you thought you already knew, and I feel bad for you. But if you follow through one of my build videos and your system doesn't power on, for example, and your heart sinks, you think, oh my God, I have $2,000 worth of parts. What am I going to do? Now you're going to learn something.
Absolutely. Yes.
And you're going to walk away. When you do fix the system, and you will, if you stick with it, you will have so much more confidence that if anything happens to your system in the future, you will not hesitate to start taking things apart and diagnosing it so much more boldly and with so much more confidence. And these aren't things that can be explained so much as they have to be experienced. And to deny yourself an experience because you're afraid of failure, I can't think of one thing in my life that I did well the first time I tried.
Right.
And to pat yourself on the back because everything went according to, like, just like the video showed, you didn't learn anything. So that's the issue I take. It frustrates me that people are so afraid of failure. I don't know why they're so afraid. Life is not always about winning all the time. One of the only ways we learn is through being frustrated and being humbled and self-doubt. That's when it strikes. Oh, and trust me, in this business as a tech, the minute you start gaining confidence, something will knock you right down and humble you real quick. It's certainly happened to me countless times, right? But the difference is I go into it with a certain attitude that is, it could be called like a bulldog. Once I sink my teeth into something, I don't let it go until, it's solved.
Yep.
And I think if you don't have that as part of your personality, then maybe you are better working for somebody else. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's no harm in that. It's been such a long time for me, Jeff. But the idea that I could clock out at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock and shut my brain off and be done for the day is foreign to me. I don't know what that's like. I wake up, I'm at work. And until my eyes close and I'm asleep, I'm at work. It's always on my mind. I'm always thinking about something with the business, whether it's the finances, the marketing, the taxes, the work that's got to get done, whatever. It never stops, and it is exhausting. It is mentally exhausting to run your own business. But to me, it's so much more rewarding. And I would rather put 80 hours in a week for myself than 40 hours a week in for somebody else. But that's my personality. And if you don't have that kind of personality, then there's nothing to be ashamed of. I worked with a guy at Intel. When Intel let him go, he started working for himself. And I said, very selfishly, isn't it great working for yourself? No. Absolutely not. He says, if Intel wants to hire me back, I will come crawling with my tail between my legs. I am a cubicle kitty.
Nice.
Those were his words. So he didn't like dealing with the customers. He didn't like dealing with the billing. He didn't like dealing with the marketing aspects. He didn't like the phone calls. He didn't like people, basically. Just put me in my cubicle and give me the computer. Let me just talk to computers all day. That's where I'm happy. Interacting with people, not so much. And again, I want to emphasize there's nothing wrong with that. But I think it's important that you go in with the right expectations. The more work you put into it, the more you get out of it. And, you know, look at the unique niches that several people in our industry have carved out for themselves, like Chris Carruthers of RS Tech Remote Support Tech Team. A very unique solution. I never would have thought of in a thousand years. I'd have never thought to do what he's doing. Never even occurred to me.
Yep.
Look at what Mike Smith over at Mike Tech Show. Look at how he's branched out. Busier than ever, by the way.
Yep.
Mike's got a shortage of Mike. He's got no shortage of customers.
That's right.
So no, the computer repair business isn't dying. And as long as there's buildings that need to be architected and cars that need to be engineered and billing systems that need to go out for charging people for their gas and electricity, for calculating sales at point of sales at grocery stores and anywhere where work is being done, computers are critical to that work being done, and they will always need to be serviced to make sure that that business can continue doing what they're doing to make money. And if you go back to remember Y2K, remember all the hype about that?
Oh, yeah.
And I never understood, why were people so worked up over Y2K? The world's going to end. I'm going to go to my fallout shelter and I'm going to, you know, I'm a prepper. I got all my canned goods. I'm ready. This was never a consumer problem. This was a business problem. So if, for example, your cell phone had stopped working on Y2K, you know what you could have done? You could have gone to the competitor whose cell phone service was working and switched your business over to them. And that would have been devastating to the company that you were with if everybody switched over because they weren't prepared. But it would have been no big deal for you as a consumer. If the local grocery store said, we're not open today because our registers aren't working because of Y2K, you would shop at a different grocery store whose systems did work. This was never a consumer problem. This was always a business problem. And for the businesses that weren't ready, which, by the way, as far as I know, there were zero.
Exactly. Nothing happened.
Right. And so I kind of feel like that was manipulated in the media to be a consumer problem when, in fact, it was always a business problem all along. And that would have been a minor inconvenience for consumers to simply have to get whatever it was they were getting from one place to get it somewhere else. And that could make a break. And one of the things that I found is that there's going to be a lot of luck involved in how successful you are. But part of that luck is that you're here in the United States, or that you're in a country where you can have the freedom to pursue that. That's part of the luck, because you could have just easily been born somewhere else. So that's luck. The other thing is you have to have the skill, and you've got to be ready when opportunity knocks. If they say, are you ready to go? You say, yeah, I've practiced. I've done my rehearsals. You know, I've fixed 1,000 computers. I fixed 2,000 computers. Yes, I'm ready to take on this big job now. That was all part of it. It's like rehearsal. You don't just pick up a guitar and start, you know, jamming out a number one hit. You practice it hours and hours every day, day after day after day. It was a famous quote. Was a violinist. Say it was like Yitzhak Perlman or somebody. And they said, I would give my life to play like you play. And he said, I did.
Exactly.
So if you're not willing to put that work into it and to wait for that opportunity, you know, when I was making my YouTube videos, I said, sooner or later, somebody's going to see these YouTube videos and say, this has potential. I can see what he's trying to do, but with his limited budget and what he's got to work with, I can see where he's limited. Somebody one day is going to reach out to me, some producer, somebody. It's going to happen. Just by me putting myself out there and doing what I enjoy doing, I'm going to do it anyway. But I have no control over who approaches me. And it took 4 years, but the opportunity with New Way came along. And who knows what that opportunity may lead to next. But had I not been so comfortable already in front of the camera, jumping in at Newegg may not have even been an opportunity for me to begin with.
Right. All the preparation that you had put in beforehand for the things that we do, we don't even realize that a lot of that stuff does prepare us for things down the road.
Oh, and it cracks me up. The comments in the YouTube on Newegg TV, somebody says, I don't know who this guy is, but he's smooth as hell. I'd buy a used car from him. Well, guess what? I've been over here polishing and polishing and polishing, and they didn't know I existed for all these years. Now suddenly I'm on this bigger platform. People are seeing me for the very first time. And as far as they're concerned, I just appeared out of nowhere.
You are an overnight success.
Yeah. As far as they're concerned, I just happened to know the right people and walked in front of the camera. It was just happened to naturally know all this information and just very comfortable in the camera. No concept that I have my own YouTube channel, that there's 200 videos out there that I've already done, or my history on radio, et cetera, et cetera. They don't know me from Adam. It's the first time they've ever seen me. Somebody wrote, and there's also been a lot of negative ones. We will talk about those. But the one of the other positive ones was somebody said, I don't know who this guy is, but I like him. And I said, I don't know who you are either, but I like you too. I mean, what, it doesn't work the other way? I mean, I don't know who you are. You never saw my videos before. I never saw you before.
Isn't it great that we're in a day and age now that we have almost no bounds when it comes to creating a community, to helping people out, to bringing people together? And quite honestly, I mean, that is what part of the reason I still do computer repair and own my own business is because of the community, because I learn from other people. It keeps me in the know. It keeps me in the game. It keeps me wanting to learn more. And as I learn more and as I've gotten older, I just want to pass that information along because I'm tired of seeing people all of a sudden get out of this business and go get a mediocre job. And one of the things I've told my kids as they were growing up, I said, you can go work a job if that's what you choose to do. It's fine. I said, but there will be a cap on your income. And you, because they're only going to pay you so much per year, and it is what it is. I said, if you want to pull that cap off and do something that's worthwhile, especially when you're young and you don't have any debts and you don't have all these things, go ahead and start your own business. Do something that you love to do that's needed in the marketplace that people are willing to pay for. And there's a lot of things. You know, somebody on our live show today was asking a question. They sent an email and they want to build custom machines. And your name was brought up because I said, well, this guy builds custom machines for his customers. And she was saying that, is the market saturated? Is it something that I shouldn't even be bothering with? She goes, I want to pay the bills, but this is what I love to do.
And so nobody wants to fail. They want some kind of guaranteed.
Well, I think people just want to be, in this particular case, I think she just wants just kind of that direction of, and we gave her some suggestions of different things she could do. Don't lose your passion for the things you love to do. Yes, maybe you have to do some things that you maybe don't like as much to pay those bills, but keep that other stuff, build those custom machines, do the custom cases and different things like that. And you find different ways to get those in front of people where people go, ooh, I'd like to have that because that's unique. People still like unique stuff. Go in somebody's house and look at all the stupid knickknacks on their shelves. And you're just like looking at this stuff. And I look at it and I go, man, dust collection. Now, if you were to look behind me right now, you can't see it here because obviously this is just audio, but I have my Lego Star Wars figurines behind me. Mm-hmm. General Grievous, Darth Vader, and Luke Skywalker. Why? Because I got them for my birthday and because I can. And
It brings you joy.
Exactly. They're neat to look at. And to me, they kind of brighten up the office and make it look a little more homey. Got to have toys, right? So, but yeah, definitely don't lose your passion when you want to do a certain thing and do what you're good at. I see so many people that they do things that they're not really good at and they don't really make a whole lot of money with it, but it's kind of they think they can't make enough money with the other things that they're passionate about. And you can, you just have to figure out a way. There's customers for everything. Not everybody that builds a computer or wants a high-end gaming machine is actually going to know how to build a computer. That's why there's boutique shops out there, because people just want to pay the money. Now, the analogy I gave earlier today was, I can look at a boutique store and see what they put together for parts, and they're going to charge me $5,000 for a computer. Well, I can go get the parts for that computer and build it for $2,000 and actually get a little bit better parts in something I'm more comfortable with. And I'll have a better machine than even what they were. But, you know, they've got overhead and they've got costs and all that kind of stuff. But there's plenty of people out there that don't want to do it themselves. They want to pay somebody else to do it. People want to find out more about what you're up to. Where would you send them?
Well, mind your own business. No.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah. It's my ball now. The YouTube channel is probably the best place to keep up with me with what's going on. I'm trying to shift away from... Let's say before I was doing 50% repair, 20% videos, 20%, I don't even know anymore. It's all shifting now. Repair is now down to about 20% of my time. And then trying to raise up the YouTube videos to about 30%, give Newegg the other 30%, and then fill in the rest of the gaps. So I guess what I'm saying is the business is still in flux and changing. I always want to be repairing, because in order for me to go out and give advice, I feel like I need to be in it doing it.
Right.
You get out of this business for 6 months, forget it. Everything will just pass. You know, what's an M.2 what? You know, I was talking with JJ from ASUS. He said the motherboard had a U.2 connector or U2 connector. I'm like, what? It's got an M.2 and a U2. I go, where's the R2-D2 connector? If it's got one of those, I'll buy it. Shut up and take my money. But apparently, Intel's got a drive out now that uses this U2 connector. And it gives you the speed and performance of the NVMe M.2 with a standard solid state drive that just has a different connector on it. But Intel's the only one making it right now.
Huh. Okay.
So stuff like that comes out and you're like, what's that? And 2 months later, there's Thunderbolt 3 and there's... the USB 3.1 that we talked about, you know, the Type-C cable that can go on either direction. Everything changes so fast. Too many people that do what you and I do it because they enjoy technology. They have an enthusiasm for technology, but they don't actually get paid in the technical field.
Right. Right.
You know, to fix. And I think it's really important that those of us who are actually out there in the trenches doing the work share that knowledge so that we can all evolve from that and all get better and all work smarter. You know, the stories that you've had guests on here sharing their business ups and downs, contract issues, customer problems, frustrating technical problems. As far as I'm concerned, that's the best podcast on the web. It's not just entertainment. It's knowledge and it's priceless. You know, real experience speaks volumes compared to just Googling stuff. And so for people to share that, I don't know if people really understand just how valuable that is. But there's plenty of people in this world, and I've been taken aside and told I should stop doing what I'm doing. I shouldn't be giving away my job because I'll be left without one. And I disagree. I don't think it works that way. And they disagree. They think I'm wrong. So I hope people prove me right. Because I believe I'm richer for it, not only financially, but again, from what I'm learning from the community in return, even though it wasn't my goal to set out to learn anything, it's like, gosh darn it, somebody taught me something. But that's the real value in it for me. And don't let anybody tell you can't do it.
Right.
And, you know, if you want to go looking for problems, you're going to find them. If you want to look for reasons why you shouldn't get in this business, then that's what you're going to find. So you will find exactly what you're looking for. So be careful how you spend your time. If you really, in my opinion, should follow your passion. And if you really enjoy something, that's what you should do. And that's the only message I really want to convey. And everything else is small stuff.
That's very well put. And that's definitely what we're here to do, is to just encourage people and help them out. So, all right. You guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallisch or Twitter at TechNotPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, like Carrie was, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.